Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between. Did you know that Motormouth is on Patreon? Yes, you can support your favourite podcast if you want. And in return, we've got some great goodies and bonus content to give you. Just search Motormouth Official on Patreon, where there are three levels of membership. Become a Motormouth companion for just £5 per month with our eternal thanks, early access to all podcast episodes, ad-free. If you fancy going for £7.50 per month and becoming a Motormouth associate, that means you can ask your own questions to our guests as well as enjoy ad-free early access to every single podcast. And if you're an absolute Motormouth legend and want to do £10 per month, you will get an official Motormouth baseball cap, a personal thank you on the actual show from us, and everything else, including ad-free early access and the opportunity to ask a question. Just search Motormouth Official on Patreon or follow the links in the detail of this podcast. Your support means everything to us and keeps us going, so thank you.
Before we kick off with today's guest, we must tell you about our Season 5 sponsors and the great team over at Motus One. Sponsors are vital for our survival and ensure we can continue to bring you interviews with the biggest names in racing. So if you or your company require event transportation, Dana and his team at Motus One has you covered anywhere in the world. From a single chauffeur-driven sedan to a fleet of luxury SUVs, Teslas or motor coaches, find your transportation solution with Motus One. With offices worldwide, including the Middle East, Europe and Africa, they can support your transportation needs regardless of your location. Motus One is committed to world-class service at the best possible rates to ensure your event goes without a hitch. Contact them at motusone.com. We'll put all their social links in the podcast description. And a massive thanks to Dana, their CEO and founder, for having faith in our show and joining us for Season 5.
This week, we're on our best behaviour as we're joined by former SAS man Jay Morton. You'll recognise him if you're a fan of Channel 4's SAS Who Dares Wins. He joined us to chat all about his career so far and his taking the plunge into the racing world as he competes in the Brit Car Championship in 2021 with the Praga Racing Team. He's climbed Everest, he's written books, he's done everything and more, and he's here to tell us all about it. Thank you so much to you guys who continue to download and listen. If you like it, please do leave us a review. It really helps us to get bigger, and enjoy.
I need to head to Essex to introduce my co-host. Now, Essex is home to the burial site of King Harold, who famously fell at the Battle of Hastings in 1066. His resting place is Waltham Abbey. What better tenuous link to bring in another Harold, or as I like to call him, Harry Benjamin. How are you?
Not technically a Harold, but I'll take that. I really thought you'd run out of your Essex facts, so well done. Waltham Abbey, that's where I take my car to have it serviced. So it's nice to know there's a nice bit of history there as well.
Oh, well, there we are. Good little stat for you there. How's things?
How are you, Timothy?
I'm all right. This is a late one for us, isn't it? It's 8 p.m. as we speak now. It's dark outside. It's autumn. It's cold and miserable.
We've kicked off season five of this, and I just thought I'd actually say, even though it's getting dark earlier, we're obviously in the UK. We're going into another lockdown, and we've had so many nice messages about the podcast, and so people wanting to hear more. And it's great that it can provide a bit of an escape for people. So thank you so much for your continued support to everyone who listens, and we'll make sure we've got an all-star lineup for you for this season five. So we're really excited to have everybody along for it.
Yeah, the feedback's been amazing, actually. So thank you for all of that. Right, shall we stop rambling and introduce today's guest?
Let's do it, yes.
It's not a joke, it's fucking serious.
That's right, it is serious, people. Today we have to be very careful what we say to our guest. Why? Because he's incredibly tough and could most likely take down Harry and I with a glance. It's former SAS operator turned racing driver Jay Morton. After an initial stint in the paras and tours to Afghanistan and Iraq, Jay went through the grueling Special Forces selection process and onto a 10-year career with the UK's elite. He's climbed Everest twice, and you'll know him as one of the terrifying directing staff on Channel 4's SAS, Who Dares Wins. He's also become an author, having written his first book called Soldier. What does this have to do with motorsport? Well, in 2021, he'll be racing behind the wheel of a Praga R1 machine. They're amazing cars. We're here to find out more. Jay Morton, welcome to the Motormouth podcast.
Jay, thanks so much for joining us. So where are you abouts in the world at the moment, and how's your 2020 been?
I think my 2020 has probably been just the same as everyone else's. Quite eventful. So I'm down on the south coast at the minute. So I spent all of the year down here. It's the perfect location to be in lockdown, to be honest, because right next to the coast and plenty of countryside.
Yeah, that is perfect. I'm jealous. I mean, lucky I've got a garden, but yeah, that's what you want, really. But before we get on, obviously, to your new sort of racing venture, we like to go back to where it all started, really, with all our guests, and find out, you know, what was life like growing up for you? What speared you on to head into the career that you've had, which has obviously been quite varied?
So I'm kind of from just normal background. So I'm a northerner by heart. Grew up in Preston in Lancashire. Just a normal background, grew up playing sport. I kind of found the military. And for me at the time, like I was never someone that liked school, kind of always getting into trouble, and found that my attention span in school was completely too short. I found the military, and that was a place where I could put my energy into, and I found a passion for it. Ended up joining, you know, when I was 19 years old, and that was the time that kind of the Afghanistan's and that kicked off. So got my fair share of Afghan tours and Iraq tours, and then led up to the Special Forces and the rest of the career.
And was that just a case of, you know, there was nothing else you saw yourself doing or you could see, and you just sort of stumbled across the military? Or was there anything in your family that might indicate that? Or was it just completely you saw it and you went for it?
I didn't have any family members that were in the military, bar kind of granddads that had served in the war. Mm. It was more of like I left school, like I, you know, left with minimal grades and went to study at college, sport, and again, you know, ended up leaving just before a year, just because I'm not good for the indoors. I'm not good being sat indoors and staring at computer screens and, you know, coursework and deadlines and stuff like that. Well, deadlines aren't too bad, but yeah, I think the educational system's not set up for me. So I ended up leaving and just going into some like really like poor kind of like factory work and stuff like that. And again, I was just bored. Like I need excitement and entertainment in my life, and that just didn't provide it, which is, you know, why I went into the military.
When you reached the military, was it all you expected it to be? Did you think, yes, I've found my calling here?
I don't know. I don't think you really sit there and go, yeah, I've found what I wanted to do here, do you? It's like, I think when you look back retrospectively, like, yes, like that fit my personality type and it fit where I was in my life down to a T. But when you're in it, it's just, you know, you're in that mix of doing what you're doing and just, you know, with a good group of lads and going around, traveling around the world and doing what you need to do.
Yeah. I suppose entering the military is one thing, and then joining the SAS in particular, that must have been a momentous moment for you in your life. How did that opportunity come about? What was the motivation behind it?
So I'd done 4 years by the time I went on to SAS selection. And that was kind of one tour of Iraq, two tours of Afghanistan. And at the time, like, you know, that second tour of Afghanistan wasn't really, I don't know, it was quite a quiet tour, and we got sent to some, you know, I wouldn't say boring locations, you know, touch wood that nothing bad happened, but it was quite a quiet tour. And, you know, I found that I was kind of searching for more at that time. And you kind of hear these rumors of lads going on SAS selection and passing out, and you never see them again. And they almost become like urban legends.
Yeah.
That kind of people speak about, and you kind of want to meet that guy, but you never do. And at the time I was in Afghanistan, and there was the SBS was stationed out there, and we used to see them at the camp coming back in off jobs on a couple of CH-47 helicopters. And they've just got a presence about them, right? They've got, like, you know, better kit. They're dressed differently. They'll walk into the cookhouse or the kitchen, and everyone kind of knows who they are. Yeah. And
they're just cool.
You know, they're
cool.
Yeah. And you want a piece of that, don't you? Yeah. It's like a 24-year-old lad. It's like, that's what you want to do.
And actually, just for you know, people who, I suppose the SAS is really, well, I suppose the idea is you don't really know about them, but obviously they're known in the UK, sort of we know who they are, what they do. Could you explain to someone who actually doesn't have any clue what the SAS is, what it's all about?
Yeah, it's a special air service. So it's the UK's tier one special forces unit. So it's, you know, you've got the kind of green army, or the basic army, as you call it, and then each army unit around the world will have its own kind of smaller special forces unit, which basically just gets all the bad jobs that no one else wants, really. And emptying bins and cleaning kitchens and stuff like that. Not all glamour.
You mentioned the selection process earlier. That's sort of infamous. Yeah. People sort of think about that selection process, and we've seen bits of it on the show, which we'll come on to later. But is that selection process for the SAS as bad as people would imagine?
Yeah, do you know what? It's probably worse.
Worse? God.
But you build in, or you're trying to find characters that are capable of carrying out that task. So, but the funny thing is, I actually quite enjoyed SAS selection, if I'm honest. Yeah, it was because I was at a time 24, full of testosterone. It was like, it was my time to like prove myself over that 6 months in front of people. And, you know, I'm super competitive. So, yeah, like going on there with like a group of lads that are all doing the same thing, you form like good bonds and good relationships. So get to the end of it, and I was quite sad to see everyone go.
Yeah. And presumably, not everyone makes it to the end, a bit like the show. There must be dropouts along the way, or does everyone tend to get through it?
Like you start with about 150 guys on day one. You probably get joined by about another 50 or 70 guys halfway through that have been injured on the last selection. And then I want to say it was probably about 15, 17 guys at the end.
Wow. God, it's amazing.
Isn't yeah. It? Yeah. So the attrition rate is quite high.
Guys, and girls?
Just guys.
Is it?
But yeah, the funny thing is, like, I don't think SAS selection's never not been open for females. I think in the writing, it just says, it says candidate and doesn't specify gender. So,
Well, so the opportunity though, with SAS Who Dares Wins, which if people haven't seen that, is obviously the hit Channel 4 show in the UK, which you made a bit of a splash on, really. It's already quite a gripping show, and the way you came into it was tense to watch as well.
Evil. I was like, you bastard. How
did you not figure it out?
No, far too stupid.
I just remember watching that poor woman who I can't remember her name, but she had to hold the her thing over her head while you just I just watched that. I went, oh my God. But so what spurred you on to join that show, and what's the idea behind it? Because obviously, you know, you've been there, done it. You know, do you want to relive it again?
Yeah, I mean, like, the show's not as comparable to like real SAS selection. It's a lot more condensed, but you're just trying to put candidates under similar kind of stresses and situations that we, you know, go through on normal SAS selection. Yeah, poor Ellie. She's a strong girl, though. She's a super strong girl.
So yeah.
To be honest, I didn't feel bad about it because, like, I knew she could take it. Yeah, do you know, like, the show puts out a good message, right, in these years, that the lads and the DS, that they're all good role models, and that's what I saw before I went on the show. And, you know, if the show wasn't doing, like, putting out that positive message and kind of, you know, coming across the way it does, then I probably wouldn't have done it. But
Yeah, one thing I've really noticed about it is that, obviously, you know, you've got to be physically fit, and you can there is literal ways you can improve your physical fitness. You know, that is, you know, they're set in stone. There's so many different ways you can do that, from diet to exercise. But then what the show does really well is it obviously takes into account, you know, the hidden mental health. That is something that has got to be so strong amongst the candidates, and obviously amongst anyone going into, you know, the SAS in the real world or any high-level military. How do you work on the mental aspect of it? Because I imagine it's not as easy, is it? Because you can't see it, and you can't just go to the gym.
Yeah, it's the mental aspect's the biggest part of it. Like physical strength and endurance will only get you to, you know, a certain point, and beyond that, like when your body stops, like your body wants to stop and not carry on, that's when your mental agility, or, you know, what's called resilience these days, that's when that resilience kicks in. And it's, you know, resilience isn't something that you're born with. It's something that you develop over time of exposing yourself to difficult things or stressful things. And that's what the military does very well, without even knowing it, is it exposes you to all these difficult, like, stresses and scenarios. And over time of doing that, you build this resilience up.
Do you think it's possible to develop a mental toughness? Because I remember watching the show with Tony Bellew, and he was pretty crazy when he came into it. You know, he admitted he had a short fuse and he found it difficult to control his temper. And in the boxing challenge, he pretty much looked like he was about to murder everybody. And he sort of improved, and it became quite a life-changing experience for him. But I imagine he's still a pretty highly strung character. Can you train your brain to have that mental strength, or is it something that you're born with and you just get lucky with?
I think everyone's probably different in that situation, right? Like, you know, you could take someone who's probably developed it over their childhood through, you know, growing up, through parenting and through what happened at school, and, you know, they've probably just ended up, you know, I don't know whether it's in certain situations that have just given them that mental resilience, or given them a reason to want to push themselves beyond what they're capable of. And then I guess other people would put themselves in a career that gives them that mental toughness or resilience. So, like, guys that join the army, or guys that play in sports teams like rugby, those guys are tough as nails, yeah, right? That's because they're constantly week in, week out, throwing the bodies into other guys' bodies trying to stop them, and that creates that mental toughness.
A quick interruption of the show to remind you to check out our Season 5 podcast sponsors, Motus One, the event transportation company. Motus One is the industry leader in complex transportation management, from hospitality, talent, production crews, VIPs and artist transportation. Motus One's team have you covered. They've also just launched their leading-edge cloud-based event transportation management system, Motus Ride. Now you can manage your entire event transport program digitally, making bookings, allocate rides, create approval processes, see reports, track costs, and loads more. Head over to motus1.com and hear how they can support your event transportation needs.
Without trying to turn this into a couch exercise, you know, you said yourself you struggled at school in terms of, you know, I guess going to it and keeping your focus and enjoying it as from an educational perspective. There are loads of kids that are like that go into very normal jobs. What do you think it is about you or your background or your mental state that makes you want to experience all these challenges and test your body and your mind to such a degree? Can you pinpoint something, or is it you think you just sort of fell into that route and it turned out to be something you were good at?
It's a deep question.
That's a good one, isn't it? I'm surprised myself with that one.
I'm going back into the deepest parts of my brain trying to answer this one. I don't know, you know, like, I think part of it is like the way I grew up, probably just, you know, I used to walk to school. It was like a mile and a half to walk to school. And you do that in the winter, you do that, you know, in the snow, in the wind, in the rain. Like, I had a paper arm when I was a young lad. So I used to manage two paper arms, actually. And then I used to work in a chip shop and have a milk round all in one. So I was like the richest guy at school, but I was like
on zero sleep, I imagine. Yeah, you're doing the milk round and the paper round.
Yeah, the tiredest guy at school as well. So yeah, I think it's partly like, you know, I grew up playing like rugby as well, so it's probably partly like a little bit of that. And then I don't know. I think it's hard to pinpoint like exactly where it came from. Like, I'm really competitive, so I'm always trying to beat people. So there's that element of like competitiveness. And then when you get thrown into the army, it's like all that mixed into one. You end up
makes for a good soldier. Yeah.
What is the biggest challenge you've ever had?
Biggest challenge. Do you know Everest is probably one of the hardest things I've done.
And you've done that twice.
Yeah. Casual.
Yeah, it is.
Talk to us about Everest then. That, I mean, I can't even get my head around it, because people getting to base camp is an effort in itself, and then you go even higher, and obviously it's so dangerous and perilous, and it's I can see the appeal of it as well, but I can also see the absolute reason of never ever wanting to do it.
Yeah, well, it's like one of those things that you just put yourself through hell for 6 weeks to just get to the summit of something, just to say you've done it. And like even getting to the summit is like quite a bit of an anticlimax, because at the end of the day, it's just a patch of land on the earth, isn't it?
Yeah. Did you get to the summit both times?
Yeah, both times. Yeah.
So it wasn't even like you failed the first time. You thought, okay, I've got to do it again because we're getting to the top. You thought, no, I'll do the exact same thing again.
Yeah. And weirdly, I felt stronger the first time. I felt fine. I had like a really good run at it. So I was like, the second time, I'm going to feel the same. But the second time, I had like, I was ill, like I had bad diarrhea.
Oh, God.
I had like a really bad day that I thought I was going to die. And then, like when I got to the top, I was. Like I've got the ability to just keep trudging on and keep going regardless of how I feel. Like, I've always got that reserve, that kind of 10% just tucked away. But yeah, I remember shedding a tear at the top of the second summit, because I was just like so relieved that I'd made it and the rest of the team had made it.
So a third time?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, like I was supposed to climb a mountain called K2 this year.
Oh yeah.
Obviously COVID's affected that, so hopefully like K2 maybe next year, and then I'm planning to climb Everest 2021 with ex-criminals.
Yeah.
So they've been in prison. They're doing this reform thing.
Very cool.
So yeah, that's the plan in 2021. So, like, do you know what? If obviously if this lockdown and COVID hadn't happened, I'd be doing some sort of high altitude mountain probably every year.
You're basically the man that I wanted to be. This, I climbed Everest, I left my socks up there, went back up, did it again. It's fine. I've got to ask, Ant Middleton. What's he like away from the cameras? Because you see him on TV and you're just like, oh my God, what an asshole! Is he a teddy bear behind closed doors?
No, he just shouts and swears like every
exactly
day,
like he is.
No, and sound. He's just a mellow character, right? And then when he's on TV, that's who he is.
Do you have? Can you pinpoint a particular point of your military career, whether that be in the paras or in the SAS, where it's a highlight for you, something that you really felt like you'd achieved the greatest thing you're going to achieve?
There's a few moments that I actually can't speak about it just because it falls under that umbrella.
Yeah.
military-wise, anyway. I think, you know, passing selection was a big point. And that was definitely, although it was, again, quite an anti-climax, because you almost just finished 6 months of selection, turn up to the parade square, like get given your belt and berry, someone takes a picture of you, and then that's it, you're off to, like, join your team.
Somewhere.
Yeah. So yeah, like that. And then I know the first summit of Everest was whilst I was still serving, so that's probably a massive achievement. And then, like, you know, that first, some of the Afghan tours and, you know, the managed to tick off quite a few things, but yeah.
So you've achieved, obviously, some amazing things in your career. You've got that mental strengthness as well as that physical strengthness, all things that you need, really, to be a racing driver. So let's turn to racing and the world of motorsport. And you're going to be making your racing debut, all things COVID-wise planning out well, driving in the Praga R1 in 2021 for VR Motorsport. So congrats, first of all, but also how did that come about? Where did motorsport come from for you?
I think it just ticks all the boxes of stuff that I like doing.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It was just a brilliant opportunity from the guys at Praga, from Mark. And we touched base during lockdown and chatted, and they're launching a new car next year. So it was, they're looking at putting some people through and racing in Brit Car Endurance in the R1. And when he said it, I was just like, yeah, like, why not? Like, that sounds awesome. I've got some sort of like driver training that I did whilst I was in the special forces. We've done quite a few track stuff, car handling, like J turns, like the evasive stuff, trying to knock cars out the way and escape out of sticky situations.
Perfect for a racing series.
Yeah. And we've done like loads of fast driving on like the UK roads and around London. So, racing's a completely different kettle of fish.
Motorsport at all? Or are you a fan, or is it just you put two and two together and this opportunity came about?
Yeah, like, I love motorsport. Like, I'm not, like, I love like a load of things, but I don't have time to like commit and sit down and watch it. But in terms of like, you know, I grew up around motorsport. Like, my dad always used to take me down to the NEC, to the classic car shows. Like, he used to have a load of classic cars that we used to pop the bonnet at the weekend and tinker around and do stuff with. And like, he'd take me to like Alton Park to watch British touring cars and like one-off little series and things like that. So yeah, I've kind of grown up around motorsport and started riding bikes when I was 21 or 20, like got my bike license, got into sports bikes, and for me, it just ticks every box.
And you're actually throwing yourself in slightly at the deep end, because this is not a crap series. The Praga R1 car, just some of the stats here: 4 cylinders, 16 valves, 380 brake horsepower, 410 newton meters of torque, 2 liter, but 625 kilograms. So that thing's going to fly because it weighs about as much as I do. You've really gone for it. Are you prepared for what's going to come? Do you have any sort of expectations about how you're going to get on next year?
Do you know what it is for me now? It's just trying to get as much track time as possible and trying to get in the car as much as possible, just to build up to that level. Because, like, I know for that first year, I'm definitely not going to be at the same level as the other guys. I've met a few other guys, like the two drivers that they've just won Brit Car now. They've just won the championship, Danny and Jem. Mm. Like, Danny started racing when he was 8 years old, and he's now 19 years old. So to get up to that standard for me so quickly is going to be a massive challenge. But it's just about getting constant track time now for me and just practicing.
Mm. Yeah. And actually, someone involved obviously quite a lot with the team, one of your teammates next year, Martin Compton, who has obviously had a previous career involved in the military as well, suffered a near fatal explosion and third degree burns to 75% of his body. He must be a huge inspiration for you as well.
Yeah, Martin's an incredible human. Really nice guy. Like, obviously, he races with Warren. So kind of the first time I met those guys was you know, we've got a lot of synergies there with both being ex-military and ex-forces. But yeah, massive inspiration and a you know, incredible guy.
That that camo livery looked so cool. Is that going to be on your car as well next year?
I hope so.
It looks
they won't see you coming.
Yeah, they'll see like a bush driving around.
When you do a J Turner, then I think they might know who it is.
Start ramming them off the road. We did this in the military.
It's absolutely very exciting. But in terms of getting track time, then how possible is that to do for the rest of the year?
Not like, well, we'll have to see, won't we? we're just going into this second lockdown, so
you can't technically work from home. You can't technically work from home. So there you go.
Well, yeah, you can travel for work, can't you?
So, exactly.
Yeah, just use that as an excuse. It just depends if they keep all the track days open. I think I've got, so I've done three races already in Geneta. I've got another race coming up, or another two races coming up. So we'll just have to see how that plays out with the whole lockdown thing.
And I know it's obviously, you don't really want to think about, you know, if you can win the championship or where you might come, but what's a reasonable target, do you think, for you? What will you go away happy with come the end of the season?
Do you know, like the competitive soul inside of me just wants to win everything, but yeah. I think reality, do you know what, like even just getting, like finishing the first few races, I think is a massive milestone for me. Because like I'm going to be new into the car, so just getting used to the handling of the car and just being able to drive that car on its limit, and just being able to push myself each race and each time I go out in that car. So just finishing the races at the start will be a massive milestone.
And for those that don't know, just tell us a little bit about the championship that you're going to be taking part in.
Yeah, so it's Brit Car Endurance. So I believe there's 4 or 5 classes in Brit Car, and this is class one, the Prague R1. So it's against kind of Ferrari Cup and what else, like Porsche 911s, that kind of car.
Well, we can't wait to watch you, and hopefully if we're allowed to come to some of the races.
Yeah,
well,
I was going to say, we should definitely get down.
Well, look, Jay, we've absolutely rattled through all of that, but we do have a final three questions that we ask to all of our guests. The exact three questions, it's brilliant, the variety of answers it throws up, and there's one question that I can't wait for you to answer.
Me too.
Tim, do you want to kick off with the first one?
I do indeed. What's got you excited at the moment?
Do you know what? I'm just about to bring a book out.
Yes, excellent.
Which is a massive turn in my career. So that's getting a lot of energy right now. So my book, Soldier, which is out mid-November, November the 12th.
And I expect the title says it all, but tell us a bit about it.
Yeah, so it's kind of part memoir, part kind of handbook. I've obviously just... You know, I've been fortunate to live a lot, you know, fortunate or unfortunate to do the last 14 years in the military, 10 of those in the SAS. So it's kind of just, you know, you talk about how do I get resilient. So the book has a chapter on resilience, where I talk about kind of where my resilience came from and what I find works for me. So it's kind of like a self-development book or a personal development book. But I've thrown a load of stories and narratives and anecdotes about kind of my life in the forces and in the military and in the special forces.
So while it's like you say, your memoirs or some stories about your experiences, it's also intended to help others who may need some sort of improvement in their own lives or want to change something about their own position in life.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's basically everything that I believe you need to be the best soldier. But that's, you know, you can read the book and you don't necessarily need to take that and be the best soldier. That's the same for everything,
yeah,
right? It's be the best human being. It's be the best at whatever you do in life.
Well, that's exciting. Soldier, that is out when, say, mid-November?
Yeah, November the 12th.
Exciting. Everyone make a note of that. Right. Well, if not doing what you've done, what you're doing, so many different things, it's hard to pinpoint you as just one thing. Yeah. But if you hadn't gone off into the military, if you hadn't, and then that would have not led to being a racing driver, what would you be doing?
God, no idea.
Yeah.
Probably the same as what I'm doing now. I'd have ended up doing something like crazy, or I'd have found my way into racing cars and
something to get the adrenaline going.
I love what I do, so I kind of found, you know, I found a way to do it anyway.
Now, our final question is one that's given up a lot of different answers. We've had people who couldn't answer because they got too emotional. We had people who are scared of very odd things, including tea bags. We would like to know from you, Jay Morton.
What, he's scared of tea bags.
Crofty, you know, the F1 commentator, Crofty.
Right, yeah.
He's scared of tea bags. So, yeah, bit strange.
He would not do well, I don't think, in SAS training.
No, no, not so. he'd be great on SAS if they had twins. Jay, what?
How do I beat tea bags?
With difficulty. But there are some, there are some other weird ones in there, but that was up there. What are you scared of?
Do you know, like, this is a bit deep, but, like, do you know what scares me? Just boredom and, like, just not living a fulfilled life that I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that scares me more than... Like, I don't have any fears in terms of, like, tea bags or spiders or anything like that. No, like actual fears, but kind of just that, you know, just getting to, like, an older age and just looking back and just going... Wasted that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's something a lot of people probably relate to, whether they say it out loud or not, really. And I think, well, what you've certainly done already in your career, with much more to go, I don't think you'll have any dangers of doing that. Jay Morton, thank you so much for coming on to the Motor Mouth podcast. We can't wait to see how you get on next year, turning your hand to being a racing driver. I'm sure you'll absolutely smash it. And who knows, maybe there's some more SCSU Dead wins in the pipeline as well. And of course, good luck with your book, Soldier, out mid-November. Jay Morton, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jay.
Cheers, guys. Appreciate it.
Before you hop off, one final reminder to check out the guys and girls at Motus One, your new transportation solution for minor, mega and signature events anywhere in the world. Motus One simplifies the complex process of event transportation and provides clients with unrivaled service and support to ensure your event's transportation needs are fulfilled. Check them out today at motusone.com, and if you tell them you found them through the Motormouth podcast, you'll get up to 20% off your first booking. Now, doesn't that sound good? Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth_, Instagram at Motormouth_official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review, and until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.